The liturgical life is very rich, so there are many ways to enter it or to ponder it. It's like a diamond, different angles give us different perspectives. So one way to continue the liturgical journey is to start with Sunday and give prominence to the theme of Sunday that kind of carries through the rest of the week. So yesterday we pondered the new commandment that Jesus gave us, love one another as I have loved you. And Jesus said in yesterday's gospel that's how people will know that we are his disciples, by our love for one another. The commandment of love is clearly part of today's gospel as well. This is still in John's gospel and still at the Last Supper. It's just a few verses later, and Jesus speaks about love. Whoever has my commandments and observes them is the one who loves me, and whoever loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and reveal myself to him. So this communion of love is clearly at the heart of what Jesus is revealing. Now, just to mention another facet of the diamond, another way to reflect on these scriptures, especially in the Easter season, is to see the continuity, because here we are in chapter 14, John chapter 14, which we started reading last week, and this is the third gospel in which one of the apostles asks Jesus something. So on Friday it was Thomas asking about the way, and Jesus said, I'm the way, and then on the Saturday it was Philip asking about show us the Father, and Jesus said, I am showing you the Father, basically. And now in today's gospel, it's Judas, the other Judas, asking about why Jesus will reveal himself to his apostles, but not to the world. So that's another avenue we can take. And then the first reading is always in the Easter season, always from the Acts of the Apostles, and we are following this marvelous missionary journey of Paul and Barnabas and all the ups and downs that are associated with it. We know that they expect to be persecuted. Jesus said, you can expect to be persecuted. What they didn't expect is to be hailed as gods. That's what happens in today's first reading. So from one extreme to another. But let's ponder for a moment this gospel. Jesus is, again, revealing the commandment of love, the dynamic of love, which exists between him and the Father, and which he wants us to participate in. This love, being loved and loving, this unity that is built on divine love. And he says, if you follow me, if you keep my commandments, you're going to be drawn into this marvelous communion of love. Whoever loves me will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we meaning the Father and the Son, will come to him and make our dwelling with him. Now, it's mystical language, but it's clearly about a communion of love. What does it mean for he and the Father to come to us and to dwell with us? Well, at the end, he brings up the advocate, the Holy Spirit. Now, we skipped over the verses in John chapter 14 where Jesus introduced this advocate as the Spirit of truth. I don't know why we skipped over them, but anyway, we know the advocate, the Holy Spirit, is the love of the Father and the Son. It is this communion of love. The Holy Spirit is the gift of love. So when he says, the Father will send you this gift in my name, he's talking about the same communion that he was speaking about a few verses earlier, where he says that we will come to him and make our dwelling with him. How does God make his dwelling with us and in us? By the Holy Spirit. So it's directing us toward the great gift that is revealed on Pentecost. Now, we remember what we were told yesterday. When we love, when we are participating in this communion of love, that's how people will know that we are his disciples. That's how they will know. And that's how we extend our mission. That's how we fulfill this duty of making Jesus known, by love. Paul and Barnabas are doing this. They're doing this everywhere they go. And we've been hearing about different towns in Antioch and here in Lystra and Derbe and Iconium and all these places, basically areas of southern, what's now southern Turkey. And wherever they go, they have two responses. One is rejection and one is acceptance, meaning people who accept, like we heard on Saturday, the Gentiles were the ones who accepted the word. They rejoiced in the word. Paul and Barnabas are kind of used to being persecuted, and they're used to being instruments of the word, leading people to conversion. That's what they want to do. But when it doesn't happen, of course, they shake the dust from their feet and move on to somewhere else. Well, here in this reading, the leaders, it says both Gentiles and Jews in Iconium, they decided to attack and stone them. They said, well, they're going to shake that dust off. They don't want to be stoned. So they flee to these towns of Lystra and Derbe. In Lystra, Paul heals a man who's crippled from birth. It's very similar to what Peter did at the beautiful gate of the temple. Remember that story earlier in Acts of the Apostles? Peter sees a man who's crippled from birth, and he says, I don't have silver or gold, but what I have I give to you, meaning I give you the gospel, and the man is cured and he jumps up. Well, the same thing happens here. Here's a man crippled from birth. He never walked before, but he has faith. Paul sees it and he says, stand up straight on your feet. The man gets up and he's cured. Beautiful, beautiful, miraculous healing. And it's a continuation of the work of Jesus now through the apostles. That's what the church does. Continues the work of Jesus, proclaiming the kingdom, making it known, bringing healing, bringing grace. When Peter was the instrument for the healing of the man, Peter and John were questioned, what are you doing? Who are you to do this sort of thing in the temple? Nobody in the temple thought that Peter and John were gods, because they were Jews. They were good Jews, they were in the temple, and they weren't going to make that kind of idolatrous error. But here in Lystra, it's pagan territory, they're not Jews, and so when the people see this miraculous healing, they conclude, oh, these guys must be gods, because only gods can do stuff like that. So if you're a pagan, that's not a bad conclusion. I mean, clearly there's some kind of divine power at work here. So they go to the extreme and say, well, then Barnabas must be Zeus and Paul must be Hermes. Those are the Greek gods, right? Greek gods. Hermes was the messenger. Mercury, I think the Latins call him Mercury, but the Greeks call him Hermes, the messenger. And so they're going to offer sacrifice to Paul and Barnabas. Now, to us it sounds kind of funny, but Paul and Barnabas realize the danger here. This is the other extreme. One extreme is violent persecution, the threat of being stoned. The other extreme is worship like gods. And Paul and Barnabas say, no, neither one of those is our mission here. Don't fall into either one of these errors. Don't treat us like gods. We're men just like you. Leave this kind of craziness and accept the good news. And they really make every effort to convince them in fact, not only to convince them that they're not gods, but to move them to accept the gospel. Notice how Paul says, we proclaim to you good news that you should turn from these idols to the living God who made heaven and earth and the sea and all that is in them. In quotation. Heaven and earth and the sea and all that is in them. It might remind you of what we heard in yesterday's second reading, where John saw a new heaven and a new earth, and the former heaven and the former earth had passed away and the sea was no more. So heaven and earth represents, and the sea represents, the whole of creation. So yesterday we were pondering the new creation came about by the resurrection. Here, Paul is saying, now remember, God is the one who made the first creation, the heaven and the earth and the sea. So he's the one we honor, not some men walking around, but God. But of course, he wants to get them past this idea of just honoring the Creator. He wants them to know that Jesus, the means of the new creation, is the embodiment of this living God who is now offering life to us all. And that's what they're desperate to. The Paul and Barnabas have tried everything they can to get these pagans to welcome the gospel. That's why this psalm was chosen, not to us, Lord, not to us, but to your name give the glory. And Paul and Barnabas are saying, don't honor us. We're just instruments, but honor the Lord. What Paul and Barnabas are also doing is expressing their love for these Lyconians or these Lystrians or whatever their nationality is. Lyconians. Love, meaning, because we love you, we will resist your error. That's love. Love always chooses what is good for the other person. Now, they could have, if they were lesser men, Paul and Barnabas could have said, oh, this is great, let's take a little glory here. But that would be a violation of their whole identity as Christians. No, they love these people, these pagan Gentiles that they're reaching out to, and so they won't allow error to overcome them. This is exactly what Jesus said. The way that you'll know, the way people will know that you are my disciples is by your love for one another. So Paul and Barnabas want them to know that they, Paul and Barnabas, are disciples of Jesus Christ. And the way they'll do it is expressing their love for them. Don't offer sacrifice to us. Turn to God, the living God. Beautiful example of love in action, right? Jesus in the gospel speaks about love and following the commandments and entering into this communion with the Father and by the power of the advocate. Yes, that's like a description of the heart of what's happening. But putting it into practice, that's what we see in the first reading. Paul and Barnabas are putting this communion of love and making this love available to the confused pagans of Lystra. And that's what we're supposed to do too, right? No matter where we are, whether we're in a holy place or we're in a pagan place where people are persecuting us or people are idolizing us, our work is always the same because that's what love does. Make known the gospel, make known Jesus Christ. And we live in a world of lots of extremes, right? I mean, the political scene goes from one extreme to another. Everybody is either the greatest person or greatest president or greatest congressman that ever lived, or he's the worst possible person that ever entered into the political scene and we have to destroy him. Well, those kind of extremes they don't come from the gospel. Our focus is on the commandment of love, the God of love, and we are simple, humble instruments of that gospel for the world.